Well, good morning. So good to be with all of you and to see all of you. And I want to join by welcoming visitors we have. I know there are some, and thank you for choosing to be part of what's going on here today. We're glad to see you, but especially it's great that you're assembling to worship the Lord. Sometimes we talk about someone having a rare disease, and sometimes we refer to the common cold. What do you think a common malady is among Christians? Something we all get that is unhealthy spiritually. Well, I think that one thing that all of us could probably identify with is that of discouragement. I don't think there is a Christian here. I'd be shocked if there was somebody here who has not been discouraged as a Christian. Have you ever looked closely at that word, that English word? In English, it originally meant to deprive of or to lose courage. Thus, discourage. But you know, sometimes our English words don't exactly line up with the words we interact with in the Bible, but this is interesting. If you go back deeper past the English into the French, words that are associated with what we would think of discourage means to dishearten, or literally away spirit. The spirit of one is away. And the idea of the heart's away and you lose courage, that idea is found in all kinds of terms that you find in the Old and New Testaments, both in the Hebrew and the Greek. Words like discouragement that we find, words like dismay and dishearten, those are the common expressions that we find in our Bibles. All of these have behind them the idea that you lack spirit or you lack energy in your inner person. And you see this concept in statements like 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 4, verse 14, where Paul says to encourage the faint-hearted. Encourage, put courage into those whose hearts have become faint. Do you remember when you were a kid of getting the breath knocked out of you? It's funny, it happens with kids. Maybe there's a medical reason why it's not common with adults. I think if the breath got knocked out of me, I wouldn't survive it now. But you remember getting the breath knocked out of you? You fell off a bicycle or out of a tree, or you're playing ball with your friends, you got knocked down. It seems like it happened all the time when you were a kid. But we use that term, that expression, symbolically, don't we? We say about someone, well, he got the wind knocked out of him the other day. And we don't mean he got knocked down on the ground and he couldn't breathe. There's no physical blow, but something happened to the person and it took the wind out of them. Or it took the strength out of them. It drained them. Well, as a Christian, do you ever get the breath knocked out of you? Or maybe even it's more like a tire. It's a slow leak. And after a while, the air is gone. The strength is gone. Well, based on those, that understanding of those expressions in with Bible words as well as words that we've used since, you know, really the key to overcoming discouragement is right there, isn't it? It's right there in discouragement. It's courage. The way to overcome discouragement is to find, muster up, develop, and demonstrate courage. If I asked you to list a group of accounts in the Bible that are a good example of somebody showing courage, I wonder what you would put, your first three or your first five. And even if we ask some of the kids who have been taught the Bible, what Bible story is a great story of courage? Well, I'm sure a lot of us would put the story down of David and Goliath. Go with me to 1 Samuel chapter 17, please. In this well-known Bible story, so well known, and this is, there aren't very many of these in our culture anymore. Even the concept of David and Goliath, by people who've never cracked the Bible in our culture, they sort of know the concept of a David defeating Goliath. Well, first read with me in 1 Samuel chapter 17 about what Goliath does, his effect on the Israelites. The neighbor to the Israelites were the Philistines, and they are constantly battling them in this point, at this point in Bible history. Read with me in 1 Samuel 17, starting in verse 3. And the Philistines stood on the mountain on one side, and Israel stood on the mountain on the other side, with a valley between them. And there came out from the camp of the Philistines a champion named Goliath of Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. Basically, he's a 9-footer. He had a helmet of bronze on his head. He was armed with a coat of mail, and the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor on his legs and a javelin of bronze slung between his shoulders. The shaft of his spear was like a weaver's beam, and his spear's head weighed 600 shekels of iron. And his shield bearer went before him. He stood and shouted to the ranks of Israel, "Why have you come out to draw up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? Are you not servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the ranks of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul, king of Israel, and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. This went on for some days, because down in verse 24, we read of a latter incident like it in verse 24, where it says, "All the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were much afraid." There's that malady that we've been talking about. How much spirit did they have? How much energy and strength and courage? None. He drained them of it. They were cowering before him, and they were paralyzed. You could say they had the wind knocked out of them by this overgrown, fierce warrior. I mean, if you're a man that big, why would you need that kind of armor? He was that big, and he had that kind of armor. This is an intimidating warrior. And these Israelites were disheartened and they were discouraged. But here comes David. David was a young man at this point. We don't know exactly. He's not a boy. He could be a teenager, could be in his early 20s. We don't know. But he is a very young man. He is a man that when you looked at him, you didn't think he's cut out for this. He had secretly already been chosen by God through Samuel to be the king of Israel because of Saul's unfaithfulness. But here he's just a shepherd. And he's on a mission from his father to go visit and bring supplies to his brothers who were with the army of Saul, who were all cowering before Goliath. And when David arrives on the battle scene, we read in verse 23 that as he talked with them, behold, the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, came out of the ranks of the Philistines and spoke the same words as before. And David heard him. David's interest is piqued. That's why we read in verse 26. And David said to the man who stood by him, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" Though his brothers tried to dissuade him from taking action here, and they're critical of him, David persists and he's brought to Israel's king Saul. And look what he says, verse 32. In verse 32, and David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go out and fight with this Philistine. There's our age-old definition of discouragement. Whether it's the Hebrews or the Greeks or the English or the French, there's our age-old description of this condition. Your heart's failed. Spiritually, you have no heart, you have no strength, you have no wind, you have no breath. He says, don't let this happen. I'll go fight this Philistine. David's going to accept the challenge, and it's going to be his courage that will be the antidote to this loss of courage. His courage will be the solution to this discouragement. And look at the conversation he has with King Saul. Verse 33, and Saul said to David, you're not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you're but a youth. And he has been a man of war from his youth. David said to Saul, your servant used to keep sheep for his father. And when there came a lion or a bear and took a lamb from the flock, I went after him and struck him and delivered it out of his mouth. And if he rose against me, I caught him by his beard and struck him and killed him. Your servant has struck down both lions and bears. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be like one of them. For he has defied the armies of the living God. And David said, the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. Saul said to David, go, and the Lord be with you. Saul then tempts David to wear his armor. David tries it on. He's not used to it. He puts it off. And like any experienced shepherd at this time, his weapon of convenience is a sling and stones. And so he finds a brook and he gets the stones, puts in a bag, and he goes to the battlefield with the sling and the stones. And look at this scene. At the end of verse 40, it says, his sling was in his hand and he approached the Philistine. Do you see this picture? Here's this young man who's not a warrior, who's standing there with a sling in his hand, and you know what the other scene looks like. How big, and I want to say big and ugly, but it doesn't say that in the text, but don't you get the picture? He's ugly in the sense that he is so intimidating and fierce, and he's got all this armor and all these weapons just hanging off of him. So much that he's got an armor bearer in front of him. What a contrast, right? Verse 41. And the Philistine moved forward and came near to David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth, ruddy and handsome in appearance. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog that you come to me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. The Philistine said to David, come to me, and I'll give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field. And then David said to the Philistine, you come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and that all this assembly may know that the Lord saves, not with sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hand. Now, that's courage. That's a man with a full heart That's the very opposite of the spirit that the Israelites were displaying. It's the opposite behavior of the Israelites before Goliath. And as readers in this text, it's like, at this point, we're like, well, we know how this is going to turn out. Not because we've read it before. That's true. But if you've never read it before and you read that, you're like, you know where this is going. What a speech. Because David had something that this man didn't have. This man had meanness. And he had physical things on his side. He had all the things that humans value. He had all the scary tools. This young, sort of clean-looking young man sitting there with a sling, he had the Lord. Because he had the Lord, he had courage. Verse 48, when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the ground. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and with a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. There was no sword in the hand of David. Then David ran and stood over the Philistine and took his sword and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut his head with it, off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw that their champion was dead, they fled. And the men of Israel and Judah rose with a shout and pursued the Philistines as far as Gath and the gates of Ekron, so that the wounded Philistines fell on the way from Sherem as far as Gath and Ekron. And the people of Israel came back from chasing the Philistines and they plundered their camp. All that dismay, all that discouragement, all that disheartenment is dispelled, it's overcome by courage and that of just one man, David. That story just doesn't get old now, does it? I mean, look at David's effect, not just on the Israelites, but also on the Philistines. The whole scene is flipped. While we should make our way toward David, we have to realize that we first start in this narrative with where the Israelites are, with our problem of discouragement. It's a condition that's brought on by various causes. Circumstances, maybe just one event happens, some setback in life, obstacles, hardships, frustrations, maybe just a stage in life. And it's true, you can have discouragement in different areas of life, but I'm talking about ultimately how it affects our spirit, how it affects our faith, how it affects our heart. We lose heart. Sometimes it's people that discourage us, maybe an unbeliever, an ungodly person, somebody who mistreats us because of our faith. But if the truth be told, at times we've probably been most discouraged by other believers. Maybe it was unintentional. They didn't intend to discourage us. Maybe it was intentional. Sometimes we're discouraged because of sin in our lives or sin in the world or sin in somebody else around us and we're being affected by it. Maybe we're discouraged because we just feel small and overwhelmed and forgotten. It's as common as a common cold, isn't it? As a result, we lose heart, we're dismayed, and we're paralyzed. David teaches us the solution by modeling courage. He got rid of all the discouragement that day. And he teaches us that you can overcome discouragement with courage. Look at what he does. First of all, when Saul's interviewing him, David says, I know that the Lord will give me this Philistine in defeat because he gave me the lion and the bear. I mean, what's up with this David? He shows up on the scene and he's like, I'll take that guy on. I mean, is he reckless? Is he like macho? Does he have a death wish? No, he's confident. And he's confident that he could defeat this large beast of a man because he had defeated large beasts in protecting his father's sheep. Shepherds get really attached to their sheep. Shepherds are very protective of their sheep. And he's a very dutiful young man. If his father says, take care of my sheep, David, that's important to David. That's his kind of, it's the kind of personality he has. And so when the lion and the bear came after the sheep, David got in the middle. David believed those sheep were worth protecting. And he took the lion and the bear on. Well, now we're talking about God's flock. God's sheep. And does he not prove himself to be a worthy king in this? I will put my life at the front of the battle line for the sheep, for Israel. Verse 37, David makes a correlation. The Lord that delivered me from the paw of the lion and the bear will deliver me from the hand of this Philistine. David had concluded that if God would help me protect my father's sheep, he'll certainly use me to protect his sheep. David had remembered what God had done for him, but Israel had forgotten what God had done for them. What am I talking about? Do you know who Goliath was? I mean, ancestry-wise. We read earlier when the Israelites in the Bible and back in the book of Deuteronomy, and then you make the transition into Joshua. And we read that before the Israelites took the land of Canaan, and also certainly the book of, Exodus even hits this a little bit, but you know, Leviticus and Deuteronomy, when you get the picture of where they're headed. When the Israelites were about to go into the land of Canaan, and the spies came back to tell them about the land, one of the things they said was, we're like grasshoppers. Was that hyperbole? No, there was actually a race of people who lived in Canaan who were called the Anakim. And they were big people. They were all NBA centers. They were of huge stature. And you know, in the book of Joshua, the last place we read about Anakim living, Gath. Where was Goliath from? Gath. So though Goliath is never called an Anakim, he's described as one. There weren't a whole lot of 9-foot people walking around. So he was part of a remnant, who knows, maybe the only one, of these overgrown people who have lived in Canaan. So look at the point. When the Israelites invaded Canaan eventually under the leadership of Joshua, it was a very faithful generation who stormed into Canaan and did what God wanted them to do. When the Israelites invaded Canaan, it had many of these giant people living in them. And God helped them to take the land and defeat these people. Israel had forgotten that. Now there was only one left standing in their way. There may have been more, but we only see one defying them. Only one. And they cower. And they're paralyzed. Israel as a nation should have known better. But Israel's like us. We have a short memory, don't we? We have such a short memory regarding what God has already done for us. Even for us personally. Fear and discouragement sets in when we don't think what we've already overcome with God's help. We don't see how things can get better because we forget how things have already gotten better. It's like we're suffering from temporary amnesia regarding our faith in God. Specifically, the question we need to ask ourselves when we are discouraged: has God not already proven he can help me? Has God not already delivered me? Has God not already blessed me and helped me through things like this? Maybe even worse than the thing that's now discouraging me. Has God before delivered us from the lion and the bear? That he can deliver us from Goliath. So this is where we find courage. How do you get courage? You got to find it. We have that expression, right? You got to find courage. Where do you find it? In what God's already done. Even for us personally. David shows us the importance of seeing God in the moment. Whoops. Seeing God who's unseen. In verse 45, David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with the sword, spear, javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord." Verse 46, "This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand." With this fierce, imposing warrior before David, who is David really seeing? The Lord. Think about how easy it would have been for David not to see the Lord here. Goliath, his sword, his spear, his javelin, his armor. David makes sure that he sets his sights on the Lord. And thus he sees this whole situation differently than the Israelites were, who were cowering. When you're most discouraged, remember this: God's not moved. We get focused on our problems and our failures and our frustrations. We get distracted with people who are working against us. And this is why we need to worship. This is why we need to pray and read the scriptures. Is we got to keep and behold the creation. We got to keep giving ourselves reminders that God is not moved. He's still there. We got to keep seeing God beyond the Goliaths. Have you ever heard the expression, "Where does an 800-pound gorilla sit?" Anywhere he wants. You've heard that, right? Did you know that gorillas don't weigh 800 pounds? The average, the two varieties that are common, between 300 and 400 pounds, and the biggest ones top out about 440, 450. So we've come up with an expression about 800-pound gorillas, and there are none in life. They're half that size. Now, believe you me, a 400-pound gorilla, they can sit wherever they want, right? That's fine. You get it, right? Things we think that are so big, sometimes they're pretty big. I mean, this was some fierce warrior to take on. It's not that he was small and easy to take on. But here's the truth. No matter what it is that's discouraging us, God is always bigger. In the end here, Goliath was a shrimp. We have to keep telling ourselves, God is always bigger than whatever I'm facing. And we'll find courage when we see him. And look how things changed. And they change quickly. Back in verse 24, all the men of Israel, when they saw this man, fled from him and were much afraid. But then verse 52, after David had slayed the Goliath, the men of Israel and Judah rose with a shout. They came out with a shout. And of course, they're on two sides, right? Remember the first picture painted for us at the beginning of chapter 17? Philistines on one mountain, Israelites on the other. Guess who's down in the middle in the valley? It's David and Goliath. So when the Israelites poured off that mountain after the Philistines, guess whose dead, headless body they ran by? Goliath. Can you imagine the energy that was infused in them when they ran by that headless giant? I bet you their feet just got lighter. They pursued those Philistines and had their way with them. Look how quickly that changed. Like that. Time is a tricky thing, isn't it? Probably one of the most painful things I've ever experienced was I was having some eye problems several years ago. And it was determined that I had a retinal vein occlusion, which meant a bunch of blood in the back of my retina. And they had a solution for it. And the solution, 3 visits to the doctor, in a matter of weeks, it was much, much, much better. The solution was a needle in my eye. I had to sit in a chair still. They didn't strap me down, and they stuck a needle in my eye and put medicine in. I mean, you may have had something like that, so you're like, ah, nothing to you. But to me, I didn't like that. I had to sit there while they came at me with a needle. And even though they put a little numbing medicine in my eye, I felt the needle go in and tug. They stuck a needle in my eye. And I had to have this done 3 times. And it didn't get easier because I knew what was coming on 2 and 3. But the one thing I kept telling myself, and that's how badly I was blind in this eye, legally blind. I could barely see a little bit. I kept saying to myself, I'm not going to be in this chair with a needle in my eye more than just a few seconds. In a few seconds, it will be over. I kept telling myself before that. Now, during those few seconds, it felt long. But then when it was over, it was over. Time is relative. I think Einstein had some things to say about that. It's very interesting. How long something is depends on perspective. He meant physical perspective. But God's an eternal God. He's not framed by time. If we can somehow get on his, you know, his timetable, his perspective. Look at this incident. It went on for days that Goliath came out and defied Israel. But all of a sudden, in a matter of a short while, it completely changed. We have to have faith to see how God can turn things around. That doesn't mean life's going to get easy. It doesn't mean that every problem's going to go away. It doesn't mean that immediately every big problem's going to go away, that the giants are just going to fall immediately and be beheaded. It doesn't mean that. But whether it's minutes or hours or years, there's a time limit. And then when that time has passed and we look back on it, the minutes and the hours and the months and the years almost like just sort of blend together, and they don't seem to be that different. Relative when you have faith. In time, God's going to make it better. And in that, we find hope. And when you find that hope in that, you find courage. Circumstances can change, and don't underestimate how quickly they can change. And then there's this. When David prepares to go to the Philistine, it says at the end of verse 40, his sling's in his hand and he approached the Philistine. And then we read in verse 48, the Philistine rose and came near to meet David, and David ran quickly toward the battle. David went after him. David met him head on. David moved forward. I know we tend to think that faults come first and then action. We think that if I can get my thinking right, then my actions will follow. There's biblical teaching on that. That is a biblical concept. But it's not all the truth. Sometimes our behavior must precede our mental state. In Matthew 6, verse 26, Jesus said, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." He's talking about not being materialistic and having heavenly and spiritual goals chief in your life. He says, "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." In other words, where you put your investment, that's what you're going to love. Jesus is teaching in Matthew 6, you put your investment in heaven. You love me. You invest in eternity, and you know what? Your heart will follow. Your heart will be into that. I guess I'll tell the Alexis story. I hadn't planned to tell that story, but I'll tell it. So years ago, when Hannah was little, we bought her a dog. And we had a big backyard. And we bought her, I don't know what we were thinking, we bought her a border collie. Where border collies are incredible, you know, they're sheep dogs, and they're very intelligent. But they're not small, and they're like high strung, and it's like, the dog was a lot to manage. And Hannah's like 4. So guess who managed? It's an outside dog. So guess who had to go out, you know, make sure she had straw in her doghouse when it was wintertime and the ice was busted from the dish and when it got really cold. I got her in the garage. And I mean, this dog, we worked with this dog. Every time we took this dog to the vet, the dog threw up in the car. I mean, this dog was like the bane of my existence at times. So we had the dog for years. And I labored with this dog because it was important to the family. And then we moved. And we were going to move from Kentucky to California, and we were going to live. There was no way we could take this dog. And so we gave the dog away. We found a farm family, and we drove way out into the country and gave it to this older couple who had a farm who needed a dog. And we left the dog at the farm with this older couple. And as we're pulling away, I look in the rearview mirror, and Hannah is crying in the back seat, and Lori's next to me crying, and guess who else is crying? I was bawling. And I was not just weeping because Hannah was upset and Lori was upset. I wept because I had put so much into that dog. I had invested in that dog, and I grew to care about that dog. Where your treasure is, your heart will be there. How do you get courage? Sometimes you get courage by just acting courageous. Running toward the battle. Because you know what that is? That's an act of faith. And when you show that kind of faith, you know what God will do? He'll pump the air in you. He'll enliven your spirit. If you know that God is there and you know that he'll eventually deliver you and you know that even the most discouraging circumstances can change and change soon, then just step forward. Take a step and then another step and then go faster. Sometimes just the act of getting up every day and saying, okay, I'm going to try one more day to serve the Lord. All right, I'm going to head out into there and I'm going to obey the Lord today. Sometimes just by taking that next step is how you create courage. How do you jump a dead battery? How do you put electricity? How do you get electricity in a battery? By putting electricity in a battery. How do you get courage in your heart? But you have it by putting it there. And sometimes it's an act that starts it. Think about how many times the Bible commands us to encourage one another in the letters of the New Testament. It's over and over and over. We need to encourage one another. One of the greatest things you can do as a Christian is encourage your brothers and sisters. Who encouraged David? Well, the Israelites, they were hiding. The brothers were discouraging. At first, Saul was discouraging, and it seems as though Saul just sort of, you know, indulged him. And you can see by Saul's reaction, he didn't expect this outcome. Nobody encouraged David. Ultimately, we have to find the courage to keep going when we are discouraged. We have to take ownership of our courage and use it to dismantle our discouragement. And when you can develop a perspective like David, and when you can take action like David, then you can find courage. You can find enough courage to overcome that which appears to be a giant. So if there is a soul here today that is not a follower of Christ, We close with a song to encourage you to confess your belief that Jesus is the Christ. If you've come to that conclusion and you know that you are lost and you need His salvation from your sins, then this is an opportune time for you to confess that faith and turn from those sins and be baptized into Christ. If you're ready to make that commitment because you thought about it and you studied it and you're ready to take that step and make that commitment, then we sing this song to encourage you to let it be known as we stand and sing.